listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Outta Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ live from Las Vegas, 200 Fox Sports radio stations across this great nation, 6 Eastern, 3 here in Vegas. Action-packed day here. And in a way, we've got two ends of the spectrum. We've got the all-pro team, the Pro Bowler set, and also recruiting day in college football, signing day. I think there's a connection there, and we're going to make it. Joined in studio, one of the pros. Who knows? Steve Fezzik. I am RJ Bell. And, well, sports bettors listen for the money. Sports fans listen to no more than their buddies. My personal promise, we will deliver the Vegas truth to you. But you can't have pros without Joes. He's in L.A. He's Joe.
Always good to be here, RJ. And we start here on Straight Outta Vegas in the NFL, where Pro Bowl selections were announced yesterday around the league. And, of course, the story of the league, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens leading the way, tying an NFL record with 12 players selected to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, and impressive, no doubt about it. But, boy, oh, boy, if we look at the Pro Bowl as – well, this is the true metric of how good players are. I think we got some evidence here that says otherwise. So if we look at the Ravens, and want to address, you know, we have a segment here called Colin Cowherd is crazy. I don't think he's crazy here, so we're not going to use it. We want to keep that crazy bar extra high because it gets reached now and again. But I do disagree with Colin on this one. His take, and Jonas, I don't know if you've heard this, his take was, well, listen, Russell Wilson must be the MVP because Russell Wilson has one Pro Bowler on his team. He's on defense. He might not even, you know, ever see Russell Wilson. They might not even have the same locker room, was his take. Whereas look at Lamar, fullback, running back, tight end, tackle, guard, and some defensive guys, the kicker, all pros, Pro Bowlers. And I'm thinking, okay, that does kind of make you think this Ravens team is so good. Even without Lamar, they'd be just fine. Well, let's look at it. I think that's wrong. I think that Lamar Jackson, somewhat the narrative, somewhat the reality of having such a double threat, a dual threat, and how it's indefensible in a way, you can't defend it, is what's leading to these selections. So if you look at the team, you've got Lamar, who's new as a Pro Bowler, and then you've got how many guys do you think that were Pro Bowlers last year, right? Oh, Lamar, he's different this year, but hey, Pro Bowler last year. One. Yonda, the guard, is a repeat. He was selected as a Pro Bowler in 2019. 10 guys are new. 10 guys did not get selected that were selected this year. They did not get selected last year. So how much of that is narrative? Oh, look at the Ravens, best team in the NFL. You know, we have a tight decision on who the outside linebacker should be. Let's make it the guy from the Ravens. Okay, I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't think that's exactly what this should be, but I see it. And it's also some of it is Lamar's making these linemen look good, this fullback look good, this tight end look good. And if not, why wouldn't these players have made it last year? Not everyone, but some of them, most of them. I mean, Justin Tucker's always been an elite kicker, but last year, not selected. This year he is. How much of that is the number of extra points, the number of field goals? How much of that is narrative? I don't know. But I know this. It's not about how good Justin Tucker is. And if ultimately we're using the Pro Bowl as a proxy, as a way to measure how good the supporting cast is, like Colin did today on The Herd on FSR, if it's not a true measure of how good the players are, then it's not a good way to go about talking about how good the supporting cast is. Fez.
Yeah, I agree. And look no further than the Ravens running back Mark Ingram. If you recall last year, he wasn't even the best running back for the New Orleans Saints. Kamara was clearly
the best
running back.
Would he be the best running back for the Saints this year? I know Kamara's had a down year. But
no, Kamara would still be better, but because Ingram's numbers have bumped up and Baltimore's winning, all of a sudden he gets selected as one of the four best running backs in the AFC.
What Vegas tries to do is cut through the crap. Why? Because there's money at stake. And most people, they'll gibber and they'll jabber until their money's at stake. And then it's about, well, that feels like the truth, so I should bet that. And most people don't bet for a reason, because they don't want to stop gibbering and jabbering. They don't want to zero in on the truth. Well, we love to zero in on the truth. I like it because it helps me win money. I like it because it helps me live life. I would hate life or like it less if there wasn't as much truth as possible in it, even when it's tough truths. You know, to me, it's better in the long run, though they, as some people say, we all die in the long run. And most bettors go broke in the long run, no matter how much truth they embrace. But, you know, we'll try to fight that as best we can here, straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell. Jonas, what do you think? Do you look at this Ravens team and think there's 10 new Pro Bowlers, and that is a sign of how good the supporting cast is?
And no, I think they're the most popular team in the league right now. It's exactly why all Lamar Jackson's merchandise is flying off the shelves. It's why they're the talk of the NFL. You can't base what the supporting cast on a popularity contest. It just it doesn't add up to me. They're the team of the year. They're the team everybody's talking about. They've been the darlings of the NFL. Their attitude, the way they go about their business, the way they play, their style of play, it's different. It's unique. And because of that, you get rewarded by a popularity vote and the most players in the Pro Bowl.
I think that was very well said by Jonas Knox, and I agree. So I'm not saying the Pro Bowl is making some big mistake, but anyone that's using it as a proxy, as how good the supporting cast is, doesn't make a ton of sense that none of these guys made it, or only one of the 11 other than Lamar to make it, made it last year. Only one. To me, that really says something. Speaking of Lamar, though, let's give this guy some credit. I tweeted this out at RJ in Vegas, if you want to respond. And this came from ESPN Stats and Info, the exact numbers here. I was a Lamar skeptic entering the year. I think that's true. That's some truth. There's been 649 players that's rushed for 1,000 yards in the NFL history, 649. Thrown for 30 TDs, there's been 124 ever. Lamar is the first ever to do both in the same season. And one of the things we talk about all the time with Belichick is how against one-dimensional offenses, he will stop them. Against multiple offenses, they can run, they can pass. It's almost impossible to stop them if they're good at both. Lamar, as a one-man gang in a way, has been able to make them a good passing offense with touchdowns being the major here, touchdown passes, and an elite running offense. If you can do both, you're a great offense. And no doubt, the Ravens' commitment to this style of football, Roman's strategic acumen, the OC, yeah, give him credit. Give Harbaugh credit. But there's one guy, you know, without the support system, he probably couldn't have done this. But I'm not sure any other player in NFL history could have done this even with the support system. And if so, why haven't they? Right. And we'll see as others try to emulate this, if lesser versions of Lamar are able to do it. I'm skeptical, but I was skeptical of Lamar. So let's give him credit where credit's due. Last thing on the Pro Bowl, Aaron Rodgers, Fez? Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers makes the NFC, and he's the one selection quarterback-wise that we got to go ahead and question a little bit. Did he make it on reputation? did he make it on Green Bay's win-loss record? Because from
what else could it be?
Well, from a pure numbers perspective, Aaron Rodgers by QBR is ranked 17th in the league right now.
Yeah, and if you look at yards per attempt, one of the famed advanced metrics of Fez likes, not great. I'm not seeing anything that looks all that great with Aaron Rodgers. And you keep hearing this talk, this amazing, great quarterback isn't having a great year, though, after the Kansas City game against Matt Moore. He was an MVP candidate. It's like, well, look back a few years. Look back maybe 5 years. Find me one season in the last 5 years that Aaron Rodgers has been a top five quarterback, statistically.
And you really pioneered.
Not in your own mind, statistically.
Yeah, you really pioneered that research. I hadn't heard that take from anyone else, and it wasn't just people were saying, he was injured. That's why he tailed off this year or the other year. He really didn't have any elite year for a stretch of six straight years.
And I'll tell you this, and one fellow from The Athletic was on that before me, and I don't recall his name, but it certainly was something that wasn't prevalent. I agree with you there, and it still isn't. You're starting to hear the question marks now, but they're questions that presuppose that Aaron Rodgers is great and what's wrong with them. I think that's an outdated concept, and I think it makes a lot of sense. If you think of Greg Cosell's comments over the years, he said Aaron Rodgers does not throw particularly well in rhythm, but when he's out of rhythm, when he's off script in a play, he's elite. Well, what happens? As your athleticism drops off even a smidge from being the best in the world to one of the five best in the world, now all those little things that don't matter as much, if you are the best athletically, start to matter. Footwork, reading the plays, et cetera. Whatever it is that makes Tom Brady Tom Brady historically, maybe not now, historically, Aaron Rodgers didn't have a ton of that. But he had athleticism that allowed him to transcend that for a while. And I think with anyone, if you try to buck the rules with your talent, it probably doesn't work ever, only with a few people. And when it does, it only works that way for a while. Aaron Rodgers, not great, not a Pro Bowl level player this year. And Green Bay, not an elite team, as we've been discussing. And oh, by the way, Green Bay, more than a field goal underdog in a key win game, which means Minnesota is perceived to be better, something we said right here for weeks and weeks and weeks.
And RJ, coming up in just a few years, we could see some potential Pro Bowlers who just made their commitments announced earlier today, National Signing Day around college football, with players from across the country deciding on where they'll be playing their college ball.
Yeah, and to me, I can just close my eyes, Jonas, and think about it. It's 3 years from now. It's Clemson. Yeah, Dabo Sweeney's still there. And oh, look, Saban's still there. He still looks young for his age. And it's the fourth quarter, 4 minutes left. Left tackle's injured for one of these teams. Who comes in? Might be someone that committed today. And what we're going to do is take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to break down these commitments quickly. But there's one thing about them, the college class of 2020 commitments, that makes whatever Clemson has done so far up till now, my guess is it's going to be so much more impressive in the years to come.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You the Fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we will get into the potential future of the National Football League.
That's a good way to say it. And these are seniors in high school we're talking about here. Right. You're listening to the fastest growing show on Fox Sports Radio, up 150% just this year alone. And we're on 200 FSR stations nationwide and FoxSportsRadio.com and the iHeartRadio app and SiriusXM and podcasts. Just search RJ Bell. Right now on the strip, 50 degrees, and the neon is flowing.
So, RJ, we talked a little bit to finish up last segment about National Signing Day, where high school stars around the country are announcing where they'll be playing football on Saturdays in the fall.
Yeah, and to me, they fight for this, these coaches. like it's life and death. And to some degree, it is. If you tell me, name the school that does well year after year and doesn't do well in recruiting, that they just so outperform their recruiting on the field, that school may exist, but it's one, and it's probably Clemson, which makes it kind of scary what Clemson did this year. Right now, the assessment is that Clemson is the very best team, had the very best recruiting class in all of college football. Now, you might say, well, that makes sense. You know, Clemson, they've been up there, right there with Alabama, as you know, doing as well as anybody. It's like, yeah, they have. But if you actually think of how they've done as a recruiting classes through these years, it's going to shock you. But first, Jonas, let me ask you, you have your finger on the pulse of the media narratives and such. I'm not sure if you're in that special club that gets to set the narratives. I'm not for sure.
No, definitely not.
But what do you think of all the talk and, you know, Feinbaum on ESPN kind of leading the way with it, I think, that, hey, Alabama's done. You know, they might win some games, but the time of them being amongst the elite of the elite is pretty much over. I think that's a fair paraphrase of what Paul Feinbaum's been saying. And again, I used to do Paul's show, like him, but I don't think I agree with this take. And Alabama being number two this year seems to go against it also.
I think that there's a feeling out there that maybe the end is near for Nick Saban, that sort of he doesn't want to continue to do this as long as people assume he wants to do it for. There's been this thought that he's going to be a coaching lifer, but you know, guys like Colin Cowherd's talked about it on Fox Sports Radio, people he's talked to, he would rather retire early as opposed to stay around too late. And so I think people, when they see Alabama have a down year or a year when they're not in the college football playoff, they look at it as, oh, well, yeah, this is the beginning of the end, instead of looking at it as, well, I mean, their starting quarterback, who's one of the best quarterback prospects in the country, went down with an injury. They put up 40-something points on Auburn, who hadn't given up more than 24 in a game. So if you actually look at their losses, they weren't bad losses. They just had a down year, but their down year compared to everybody else's is still a great year.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it, is this is a down year in which Tua, in hindsight, was far from 100%, it seems, in that LSU game. I mean, Fez, if you had to just eyeball test it, what would you say about Tua in that game against LSU?
Yeah, 60% clearly was not himself.
If they replayed that game, Tua's 100%, Alabama's favored, right?
Well, no question.
They were lucky enough to be at home, so if it's at LSU, maybe not. But LSU's having a, what, once in a, how many playoffs does LSU have? Appearances?
I don't believe
one.
No, I don't.
Or zero?
Yeah.
Because they haven't appeared yet this year? So all of a sudden now it's like they bring in, LSU does a new scheme on offense, a young kind of passing game coordinator fellow that has done an amazing job, not even the OC, but behind the scenes seems to be a big factor in how well they've done. Brought in Burrow, who, I mean, let's be honest, was 200-1 to win the Heisman. Did he win it? Yeah. That means that it was this fluky long shot, which makes the case. LSU required a fluky long shot to make the playoffs once in the history of the playoffs. And isn't LSU supposed to be one of the 7 or 8 most pedigreed programs? Like if you said, next 20 years, count national championships, and we started drafting right now, and we said, and let's not start for 5 years. We'll start in 2025. So it doesn't matter who's good now, in theory. It's what kind of programs are going to persevere. Wouldn't it be Ohio State? I mean, in theory, you start saying a USC, though maybe that's changing. If you look at the recruiting this year, and you go through the list, you can say Oklahoma, you can say Texas. You might say Georgia, you might say Florida. I mean, LSU's in that top 10 for sure,
yeah,
wouldn't you say, Jones?
100%, 100%.
And they have one appearance that took a 200-1 shot winning the Heisman pretty much. I mean, if Burrow would have been 10% less good and didn't win the Heisman, I think LSU maybe still makes it. But it took a big surprise. And for Bama, pretty much everything goes wrong, and they barely don't make it. I mean, we can all speculate how long Nick Saban's going to coach, but I got to be candid. I listen to Colin a lot. He seems to go in both directions on that. Sometimes it's that he doesn't think Saban wants this or that. And then sometimes he's like, well, he'd be good on TV. And then other times he says, well, you know, he's ensconced down there. Maybe he should go to the pros. And it's like, literally, it was in the last week or two, he was saying Saban should go to the pros. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If he doesn't want to coach, why is he going to the pros?
Yeah, at this point, yeah. And there's also, I was watching the Belichick and Saban HBO documentary that came out. And I think people look at Nick Saban and his time in the NFL as just a complete and total disaster, like a Steve Spurrier. He was only two games under 500, and with Dante Culpepper as his quarterback, he split four games with Belichick in the AFC East with the Dolphins.
In a weird way, though, that would make it where he'd want to come back, meaning the stink is on him because of that. Right now, if you try to make that nuanced point, it's not going to go very far. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But in general, in 20 years, when they talk about Saban, they're going to say maybe the best college coach of all time couldn't hack it in the pros. That will be the narrative.
And I look at the loss against Auburn, and I mentioned this earlier, but your backup with a backup quarterback on the road, they put up almost 50 points against Auburn. And LSU only put up 23. That was their backup quarterback on the road, and they were in that game, probably should have won it, and there was a fluke pick six off a guy's back. I don't think everything is as doom as gloom as people make it out to be.
Well, especially when you're the number two, Ohio State behind them, LSU behind Alabama, go down the list, Oklahoma behind them, Texas behind them. Oh, by the way, ahead of them, Clemson. Now, check this out. This will be the most impactful thing you hear today. Clemson's recruiting rankings last year, number 10 in the country. Year before that, number 7. Year before that, number 16. Year before that, number 11. Year before that, 9. And I'll keep going back now. 16, 15, 20, 10, 27, 36. So starting in 2009, which implies 2013, they're seniors, and Clemson started getting pretty good in that era. These were the rankings for Clemson's recruiting classes. 36, 27, 10, 20, 15, 16, 9, 11, 16, 7, 10, and now 1. So this Clemson team that literally has gone Apollo Creed, Rocky Balboa, toe-to-toe, Rocky II, both going down for a 10 count. Well, wait, Balboa up at 10 has literally been that kind of what, on average, you look back the last 4 years, they've averaged about number 12 in the country. That's what, through player development, that's what through on the field, X's and O's, scheme, domination, edge creation that Dabo, Sweeney, and Clemson has done. They've had about a dozen talent number 12, and they've been either the first or second best team of the last 4 or 5 years. Now that they actually have talent that's equal to, and maybe based on these rankings, better starting now, starting freshman next year than Alabama, than anybody, unless Sweeney gets stupid as a coach, doesn't develop the players as well, doesn't scheme as well on game day, I'm not sure if Clemson in the next 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, if things stay the same with the coaching staff, with Sweeney especially, that this won't be the most dominant 5 or 6 years we ever see in college football. Because if you've been toe-to-toe with the greatest college football team ever, which Alabama's been called that of the last 10 years, I think fairly so. And if you've been toe-to-toe with them for 5, with recruiting classes in the dozen or so range, number 12, and now you're ahead of them, and everything else stays equal, give me Clemson. And that ACC will be an advantage, right? The theory is they can win that every year. Wow. I mean, that's mind-blowing.
I think that's a huge point about being in the ACC, because let's face it, every now and then Alabama's going to run into that once-in-a-generational team from an LSU or a Georgia, but the ACC right now, as it's constituted, there's just no one that's going to be able to get good enough to be able to beat a loaded Clemson team.
That's a good point, but I tell you this, though. They'll figure a way to get two SEC teams in. If they're even close to being worthy, they found a way that Georgia was going to make it somehow if they could just squeak out a win. So, in a way, it's almost as if you're going to try to make the Final Four, I think the weak conference is better, ACC in this case. Though we never know what they're going to be in 3 or 4 years. But I think if you're trying to win it, like Temple back in the day in college basketball, I think those wars help you. Because it doesn't matter, it seems like, who you are these days. One of those games, either the finals or the semis, is going to be a tough game. That's interesting. Has there been one time in the playoffs that the champion didn't have a tough game? That they won clearly in the semi, and if they won clearly in the final, I don't recall.
Ohio State. What, didn't Ohio State blow out with the Cardale Jones
year?
Well,
that Oregon game was pretty close, wasn't it? Remember, they were 7-point dogs the Buckeyes were in that game. And if I recall, that game was fairly close.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
We'll look it up. But I tell you this, a majority of teams have had some battles that won it.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously Clemson versus Bama has been multiple years now a tough game.
Yeah.
So if you're not used to the tough games, to me that's a disadvantage. Might be a disadvantage for Clemson. Might be the only one. Because you got it?
Yeah, Ohio State only won by 7 in the semis, but then they beat Oregon by 22.
Oh, okay. Maybe as a Buckeye myself, I was thinking, this feels close. And in the semis, it was against who?
Alabama.
Okay. Oh, I remember that. They were dogs in that game, too. Yeah, it's hard to beat, you know, the other two Final Four teams easily, it seems. But you could also say, well, if you're not injured, if you're not banged up, you don't have the psychic burden of those close games. My feeling is you got to get used to those close games. But either way, the takeaway from today is for the first time ever in modern memory, Clemson has had the best recruiting class in the country. And literally, it's the first time they've been above number 7. And even when they were at 7, it was odd. It was like, well, it was 12, then it was 7, then it was 14. This team has not recruited well. And they've been amazing on the field. Now that they're recruiting well, or is better, as good, or if not better than anyone, who knows? Who knows?
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
What do you got as game number one?
All right, Saturday, Rams, San Francisco. San Francisco laying 6.5, and I would only look towards the 49ers, RJ. I think this is all about situational spots. We got a 49ers team that let one get away against Atlanta. We talked about how it was a sandwich game for the 49ers against Atlanta. The 49ers had a 9-point lead. They lose in the final 2 seconds of that game. I think it's a good bounce-back spot for the 49ers, and I'm concerned about the Rams' dream crusher, baby.
But was it a dream crusher? Well, because my understanding is if the Rams win both games and if the Vikings lose both games, the Rams are in.
Yep, 3% chance of that happening.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I know you like to get your abacus out, but most of these NFL players don't have an abacus. Do you agree with that?
Agreed.
And what they know is we can make this. I just don't think, and in a weird way, getting so beat by the Cowboys, maybe it's not as much of a crusher. Maybe it's like, this is the way NFL games sometimes go. The Rams have been, since the trade, and this seems weird to say now, after last week, and obviously I loved the Cowboys last week and didn't like the Rams in that spot, but this was a team that was considered 4.5 points better than the Cowboys. When they were road favorites by 1.5, the Rams over Dallas in Dallas, saying 4.5 points better. Now, how much do you downgrade the Rams? All right, maybe a point even. I don't know. But they're still, like, significantly better than the Cowboys, right? So I just wonder. I don't disagree with you that the 49ers let one slip away, but you really think the Rams have given up on this season, especially considering the fact that they do, the consequences seem to be dire, that if you look at the lack of number one picks coming up, you look at that Goff contract, you look at that Gurley contract, you look at what they're going to have to pay you know, for some people coming up with Ramsey being at the top of the list, big money, it's almost like you got to still hold out hope. What do you think?
I think if you answer that question, you have a winner here. I really think this is a team that went to the Super Bowl last year.
Mm-hmm.
At 8-6 after that beatdown by Dallas, I think that the players know in their hearts they are not a contender.
That's ridiculous. So now we're changing. It's going from they don't have a viable chance to make the playoffs to even if they make the playoffs, they're not really going to be competitive. I mean, who wouldn't they be competitive with, Steve? I mean, look at your own power ratings. All right, who's the best team in the NFC?
Best team is San Francisco.
All right, and what would San Francisco at home be favored over the Rams?
Well, that's this very game.
Okay.
And I actually make it 7.5, and the line's only 6.5. I have San Francisco 4.5 better.
So you should be able to get another mansion off of this, right?
I'm worried about the injury report.
There's always some story about it, right? But the fact is, you're saying there's a team that's less than a touchdown underdog in the worst spot they could be in. Because you're saying there's questionable motivation for the Rams.
Yes.
Which implies if this was a playoff game, there wouldn't be.
Yes.
Okay. Thus, the line could only be lower.
Yes. Thus, I like San Francisco.
Well, no one's asking you who you like. We're asking you if your assumptions about the Rams having given up are correct. We got you like San Fran. Hey, Jonas, you hear he likes San Fran in this game?
Oh, is that what he was saying?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. We're past that now. My question is, how can the Rams not be motivated? Is it because they don't think they have a chance to make the playoffs? Well, like we said, they just got to win both games. Vikings losing to Green Bay is not that crazy. And let's be honest, Kirk Cousins with the pressure on in week 17 would give any team hope, right?
Yes.
And then, but then it switched in midstream to, well, they don't really seem competitive. Except, wait a minute, when the Patriots beat the Rams back in their first Super Bowl win, they were 14-point dogs in that game. Somehow we're saying that if the Rams played the 49ers, which would be the worst matchup the Rams could have, based on your theory that 49ers are the best team in the NFC, they'd be 6-point dogs, we're guessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something NFL players are going to say, well, we're 6-point dogs, we can't win that game? Why even show up?
No, they won't say that.
I don't believe. And listen, Steve's points are, I think, incorrect, but they're valid. They're reasonable. That's the whole point of week 16 and 17 NFL, is assessing the mindset of these teams. And it is not art or a science, it's art. And he very well could be correct here. I just don't think so. I think the Rams have a lot at stake. It's like if you buy a 10-year lease, if you sign for 10 years at a certain beachfront property, let's say in Myrtle Beach, and you go there and it's like the beach smells and the people seem a little scuzzy around you, you're going to find a way to talk yourself that, oh, this is just going to be fine. Why? Because the stakes are high. You got 10 years on this lease. The Rams have made a commitment to this team. I'm not sure how they recover from it and thus holding on hope that this year's team might do something. I think there's no sense that next year's going to be better. And some teams feel like next year's going to be better. And if so, they take losing this year easier. I don't think that's the case with the Rams.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm RJ Bell. We are straight out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. It is best bet time here on Straight Out of Vegas. And we go over to none other than Steve Fezzik.
Steve Fezzik, best bet.
All right, Tennessee Titans +3. Got to lay a little extra vig, -120 against.
All right, so it's +3, -120.
On the Titans, and this is all about the situational spot being favorable for the Titans. Drew Brees, New Orleans, my goodness, he looked good. It was celebratory in the Dome on Monday Night Football, and I could see New Orleans having a little bit of a hangover and a short week going into this game. This I know, RJ, the Tennessee Titans, we talk about motivation. They lost against Houston. That's another game you beat my brains out of in terms of a heads-up bet, but the Titans, let's not talk about a 6% chance to make the playoffs. Let's talk about a 58% chance. That's what their chance is right now. They need this game like blood. So the Titans are playing for their playoff lives. New Orleans is playing for playoff seeding. A big difference
there. Whoa, 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 whoa. We're calling getting a bye or not getting a bye seeding.
That's big, but playing to get into the playoffs is
bigger. Yeah, but do you go past 10? That's the old Spinal Tap question. Does the amp go past 10?
This so one goes to 11.
No. Here's the question. Will the Saints be less than fully motivated? Because if so, you've got a point. If not, you don't.
Saints will be fully motivated.
Then what's the point? If anything, there's pressure on a Tennessee team that isn't used to it. When has this Tennessee team ever really had, or when has Tannehill specifically ever had pressure except for last week?
Fair enough.
I don't know. So is this all about motivation for you?
Well, this Titan team, I could argue, easily can argue, is undervalued because remember, they went ahead and had bad quarterback play the first half of the year, and it took Tannehill a while to learn the offense.
I agree with that.
This team was playing at such a high level their last four games.
So how do you explain what happened in Houston? Because you could say, well, there was the pick six, but then Houston had two interceptions in their own end zone, which you wouldn't expect from Watson, right? The luck seemed to even out in that game.
I think the luck did even out. Houston was the right spot. Houston was in a bounce-back spot, and Watson played really well. He beat the Titans.
All right. I agree with you. If you look at the games since Tannehill, and again, it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing to say, well, since they started playing well, that's when we should start thinking about it. But even if you consider the Houston loss, Tennessee really has played amazingly well in those, I guess you'd call it, four games now. The idea that they're getting three at home, I agree with you. I think there's value. I don't think the value stems from a lack of motivation on the Saints, though it can just be physical to some degree. That short week and all the emotion around the game, they can want to be there fully effort-wise, but maybe they just are a little spent. So I agree with your pick. I just don't think the motivation is the angle. Closing thoughts on it.
Well, the fact that the Titans were able to win against Kansas City, a team I'm super high on, I think they can certainly beat the Saints.
And we know that you respect nothing more than your own opinion. I mean, that's the ultimate. One last thing, and this one's amazing, I think. If you go back and look, there was a college basketball game last night, and you want to talk about, it's not a bad beat. This is one of those, the worst beats. North Carolina A&T was plus 14 against Kent State. Now, college basketball underdogs plus 14 or more that entered overtime had won 147 straight against the spread. They pushed. They lost by 14. So for the first time in 148 games, there were people that bet a plus 14 or better dog that literally didn't win when the game went to overtime. That is not a bad beat. The worst beat.